Good morning, friends, and welcome to Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm your host, John Sloop, along with Dean Welty, founder and director of the Valley Family Forum. Our dear friend, Rita Dunaway, is still on assignment, and we look forward to her return. This morning, we conclude this six-part series on education in America. And Dean, we've had wonderful response to this series of programs. Now, if you, our listeners, have missed some of these programs, which we've had on public education, on two private Christian schools in our area, and on homeschooling, just go to the Valley Family Forum website where all Crossroads programs are archived. We are so grateful to you, our listeners, and remind you that it is your support that keeps Crossroads on the air. So please send your contributions to Crossroads, P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, Virginia, 22803. Now, today, to wrap up our education series, I am thrilled and delighted to welcome to Crossroads Dr. Roger Parrott, president of Belhaven University in Jackson, Mississippi. I graduated from Belhaven in 1970, along with my wife, Gwen, and currently my brother-in-law, Dr. Joe Martin, and my sister, Helen, are proud members of the faculty of this unique evangelical Christian university that I am so pleased to be able to introduce to the Valley of Virginia. Dr. Parrott, as we begin, please take a moment to tell us about yourself, your family, and your journey in higher education. Welcome to Crossroads.
Well, thanks so much. It's a treat to be with you. And I've got to tell you, Joe and Helen are my models of what faculty ought to be like. I have told many, especially new faculty, I said, if you want to find the pattern for how to do this right, watch Joe and Helen, and they will show you the way. So they are just marvelous faculty with us. But I'm kind of unique in and what God has blessed in my life in that I'm a third-generation college president. I work at the desk my grandfather worked at back in the 1930s, and my father was a president and a pastor as well. And so I think there are a number of second-generation presidents in the country, but I think I'm the only third-generation president. So I come out of that kind of a unique history of a love and growing up within the Christian higher education world. I came to Christ at a very young age, about I was six, at my dad's church when he was pastoring in Flint, Michigan, and grew in the Lord through normal high school kinds of things, being part of the church. Went to a Christian college, and there really committed myself in a deep way to Christ, and met my wife the first day of the freshman year, and we've been together ever since. Just had our 40th anniversary, so two kids who are marvelous and fun and full of life, and a whole campus full of students that I desperately love.
That's awesome.
Well, Dr. Parrott, we've got a lot of ground to cover about Belhaven and the university education that you provide. But before we get there, I note in your biography that you also are a former pastor, and now you have been nearly 20 years as president at Belhaven. The average tenure of presidents there is 13 years, so you've got a long track record of leadership. And in 2010, you wrote a book on the long view, lasting strategies for rising leaders. Well, you've got a whole campus full of rising leaders. So I'd like, first of all, for you to tell us what prompted you to write this book and what kind of response have you received from it?
Well, the book came out of my level of concern that as I've watched leadership for so many years, I've been in the presidency for 27 years. I was again rather unique in that I was elected at age 34, so I'm not that old. So I got a long way to go, but I've been at it a long time, and so I've been close to leadership for a long time, and have watched really over the last 30 years how we have developed a generation of leaders who are focused on short-term solutions to complex problems, and we have taught leaders how and rewarded leaders for putting, getting quick answers and band-aids on problems and making things look like they're better when actually they're not. And I think we have accelerated the demand time on leaders for making change and bringing about change. And I mean, you even see it in our political system last night here. We're this far out from a new president, and we're in a heavy debate cycle already. Where years ago, when Nixon ran for president, he announced 1 month before the first primary. We have shortened the cycle of what we allow leaders to have time to do. And in doing that, we're focused on short-term solutions rather than long-term impact. And so the book is a call to change that pattern, but it's not just a call to change the pattern. What do you do about it? Because we've taught it the other way so long. And so the book's really kind of an outline for leadership of how do you implement that? What do you do? How do you hire different? How do you evaluate? How do you set goals and patterns and plans? How do you work with a board? How do you build a culture that is interested in long-term perspective? And so it's been a great experience, and I do get a lot of nice reaction to the book, and I'm hopeful that it's helpful because it's very different from a lot of the leadership books, this book on the long view.
Well, just two more comments on that book. You mentioned the importance of leadership in building a healthy organizational climate, and you say that can come only through wisdom, courage, determination, humility, and prayer. Well, that's easy to say, but how do you develop that?
Well, when you're changing, you know, organizational climate, it's one of the hardest things to change. When you do, you have to change it on purpose. You have to change it with patience, and you have to change it starting with a small group. So you bring about a group who understands it and gets it, and you start to empower them and start to help them to broaden that circle and push it out. And it's kind of amazing how organizational culture can change. We assume it's stuck forever.
Yeah.
But with purposeful leadership, I think it can change, but it's probably one of the hardest things to do. And I think I laid out like a 12-point process of that, because it does take time, and it takes a lot of determination in order to do it, but it's one of the most important things to do.
Well, the final thing, and just briefly, you mentioned the need for leaders to maintain balance in their lives so they're able to do their work, achieve their goals, and I assume maintain a healthy family life. So how do you do that, and what do you do to relax?
Well, you know, I've always said, at least my job, and I'm sure a lot of jobs, will take everything and I'll give it. And so if I don't draw the boundaries, nobody's going to, because there's always more to do. But I think what I have found is if I don't keep balance, I don't make good decisions.
Right.
And for a university, probably the hinging of the most significant things that will happen this year will be made in 5 to 7 decisions. And being balanced in my spirit and my walk with the Lord and my perspective is critical to be ready to make those decisions when they come, because you never know when they're going to come. So
right.
I try to balance it. I do like to work hard because I enjoy it, but I make sure I'm home for dinner with family and we have our time, and then I'll head off to hit the emails and that kind of stuff. And, you know, I'm a fly fisherman who does it in his mind more than actually on a stream. But but that's always a joy for me to at least think about a trout resin or a dry fly.
Well, Dr. Parrott, the Valley of Virginia is known for great fly fishing. We have beautiful, pristine streams, and you are invited to stay with the sloops when you come visit sometime.
Oh, don't invite if you don't mean it, because I would come.
I mean it. But before we get into Belhaven and to sort of your philosophy and theory of higher education and biblical worldview and curriculum and so forth, I noticed in your biography that you and Mary Lou, your wife, who also holds a PhD, that you homeschooled your two children. I think that's commendable. We've had a program on homeschooling. Homeschooling is strong here in the Valley. Tell us what led you and Mary Lou to make that decision to homeschool your kids.
Well, my kids probably made it. They just dropped out. They just didn't learn in that environment very well. And school is, you know, a lot of the days packed around trying to keep order and direction and that kind of thing. And they were just inquisitive about life and the world and ideas. And for them, it just worked. So it was just a learning style issue with us. And Mary Lou obviously made a huge sacrifice to be home with them, because she had taught at the University of Maryland and other universities, and dropped out of that for 20 years. She's back in the classroom now, which I'm thrilled about. So it was a big decision. And, you know, but what I found about homeschooling, and probably half of our faculty homeschool, or provost homeschooled, I've homeschooled, so we're pretty experienced with homeschoolers, and we like homeschoolers a lot at Belhaven. We've got a lot of homeschoolers. But what I found about homeschoolers is I think too often parents beat themselves up about trying to be rigid and trying to create great storehouses of curriculum and lots of different activities and try to duplicate a school. And that's fine. And for some families, that needs to work. What we found for us is just the conversation of the ideas and the world and reading and those kinds of things. I'm so thrilled with what it did in my kids' lives. But we lived with all the guilt that homeschoolers have of, oh, I should have done more. I should have this curriculum. I should have this all laid out. And I think that's part of the homeschooling culture.
Yeah. Can you say just a word from your perspective about the state of public education in America today? I'm thinking particularly elementary, middle school, and high school at this point.
Well, John, just to add to that, you quoted Al Mohler at one point.
Yes, Al Mohler in his book Culture Shift talked about perhaps now is the time for the church to develop an exit strategy from the public school. What's your take on that, Dr. Parent?
Well, I like Al, but I would disagree pretty strongly with him on that. I think Christians should not retreat from anything. We need to be in the mix and bringing the love of Christ wherever we can. I'm concerned about the state of public school, more so about curriculum and academic quality than I am about culture war kind of issues. In fact, I wrote a chapter for a book a few years ago, The Complete Evangelism Guidebook on evangelism for public school teachers and how to go about and do that. And I produce tons of teachers every year, tons and tons of teachers who love the Lord and love kids, and they want to be in those classrooms and impacting those families. So, you know, I'm pretty optimistic about what Christians can do and what is happening with most teachers. What the concern is that the challenge of dumbing down so much all the curriculum brings students to a point they're just not prepared. I think, the ACT says that about 22% of students nationally are prepared to go to college and when they come out of high school. And so that puts great burden on universities to do the remedial work that high school should be doing. And, if elementary had stopped them at the right point and pulled them back and made sure they had the right skills, we wouldn't be there. But it's often in reading levels. That's where we see it the most often. And, so I think we've got to engage parents and families and that educational process. Nobody can do that better than a Christian teacher. So I'm all for staying in and bringing the love of Christ to the classroom.
Well, Dr. Parrott, that really brings us to Belhaven University specifically. You've been there now almost 20 years. I guess January of next year will be your 20th anniversary. During that time, and I may have the figures wrong, but I think enrollment has tripled or about that. That's a great record. Congratulations for that. I wonder if you could just summarize what you consider to be some of the major achievements as well as some of the major challenges during that time.
Yeah, the Lord has blessed us over these 20 years, and it's been interesting to see because we are in a unique situation. We're in a wonderful we're in the city of Jackson, which is the capital city of Mississippi, so it's got lots of resources, just named one of the top five small arts communities in America. And we're bounded by a beautiful little historic neighborhood. So it's a nice, safe place to be and a wonderful place to be. And we've got a charming campus. And we have about 1,200 traditional students on that campus. But we also want to serve students who can't come to that campus. And so we, many years ago, were pioneers in adult education. And we now have campuses for adults in Jackson, in Memphis, in Houston, Atlanta, Chattanooga, and then we have Orlando as well. So we've been across the Southeast with our adult program and now added to it our online program with over 1,000 students enrolled in online undergraduate and graduate degrees that are getting the same Christian worldview that we give in the classroom on campus. So it's a changed institution in that we're about 4,500 students overall, but we still keep that small feeling campus of 1,200 on the traditional campus. But, you know, Belhaven is unique and different. We are a school very committed to Christ and very committed to strong Christian worldview within our faculty and integrating faith into everything that we do. At the same time, we don't require faith statement of students. We want students to come wherever they are in their faith journey. And I think that when Christian schools require faith statements, often students will commit to that statement when they're not really there, and then they never get to ask the hard questions of life. We want students to come work it through, and the most important tough decisions of life are made during your college years, and what greater place to make them with a faculty who love Christ and love students, and will talk openly and honestly about things. So, you know, when it comes to where we are, it's hard to identify what it means to be Christian, and so we use what we call the identifier. It's not our slogan, it's an identifier. On all our materials, it says our standard is Christ, because it is. Our standard is not the accrediting associations. Our standard is not the NCAA. Our standard is not the Department of Education. Our standard is Christ. And so we work very hard to keep that center and forefront in what we do. We're very committed to academic quality. You know, unfortunately, when you survey the American public, if it says it's a Christian university, they assume the quality is lower. And that's just a natural jump. And we are proving that that's not true. Our scientists are doing incredible things. We're one of the top schools in America in the arts, one of only 33 credited at the very highest levels in the arts. So we've got a graduate school with 1,200 students and tons of different master's degrees. Just started a new nursing program, which is growing like crazy. Our sciences are going through the roof with a new building. There's just a lot of good things happening. And, you know, it's a place where I think students come to find their place. And we believe that God creates every student for a very specific purpose, and our job is to help them discover that and build into them those gifts that God has given them.
Well, Dr. Parrott, I remember receiving in the mail, I think, your very first president's letter upon assuming the leadership at Belhaven, and I was so impressed with the Christ-centered nature of your letter. And I immediately called Joe and Helen and said, tell me about this guy. And I have just seen an amazing turnaround. I said this last week. When I went to Belhaven in 66 to 70, Belhaven had a wonderful Bible and Christian education department, bar none. It was one of the best. And yet, from my perspective, the rest of the university, in all of its departments, the math and history and English and science, I would not really have said was Christian in its worldview. But you have brought about that turnaround. And so speak to us more about Belhaven's mission and faith statement. And then I know that you are excited and very proud of the curriculum change that you brought about, I believe it was in 1999, that sort of revolutionized the core curriculum. Speak to us about that.
Yeah, it has been a culture change, and it's been a long process. Fortunately, it was started by my predecessors, who made some hard decisions and put their stake in the ground, said, here's where we're going to stand and what it means to be a Christian institution. And so, you know, we've seen that happen, and I would say at every corner of Belhaven now, you will find Christ lifted up. I did a chapel a couple of years ago that was interesting to me. I asked the students if you could ask God one question, what would you ask him? And so I got tons of cards back, and I was going to get a faculty panel together to respond to these various cards. And I realized as I was going through it, there was not one single faculty member we had that I would be afraid to put on that platform.
Wow.
And I don't think most Christian colleges can say that. Mm-hmm. I would be comfortable with any one of them to get up and to answer that. And so we are unique and different in how we go about it. I think one way to understand that is what I tell prospective students, and that's when you're looking at schools, the question to me is don't look at the brochures, which we all look good, and we all have a picture of a student sitting by a lake, even if they don't have a lake. They actually have a lake, but they don't all have a lake. And they say, you know, you're not a number and all this kind of good stuff. Well, that's fine, but that doesn't tell you much about the school. So here's my criteria for how to understand a school, and this will explain part of our curriculum as well. 10 years ago after 9/11, the University of North Carolina made a decision to require all students to read the Quran. Now, I'm committed to world evangelization. If we're going to reach the Muslim world, we've got to understand what the Quran says, so that's fine. Of course, they didn't require anybody to read the Bible.
Right.
But as a educator, my initial thought was, how many committee meetings did it take to make that decision? Because that must have been overwhelming, because college students are so busy, you can't require them all to do very many things. So I asked the question, what do we require of everybody? And I think it identifies who Belhaven is. We require four things. We require a freshman course called Mosaics. It's designed to identify their gifts. And we use the Gallup Strength Finders to help identify their gifts. We talk about spiritual gifts and how do you use your unique gifts for success in college and in life. And so we're very committed on the concept of they are unique, let's build on their gifts. Too much of higher education is making up for your deficiencies, not building on your gifts. We'd rather build on your gifts. If you build on your gifts, you can hire people to make up your deficiencies. And so we're really committed to that. The second thing is we value our Christian worldview. And so, yes, in many years ago, we redid our curriculum. You know, when you and I all went to college, we, you know, you took history, you took philosophy, you took English, literature, and a few years later, you say, oh, I see where some of those things overlap. We said, that's a crazy way to teach. Let's teach the history of the world through a period, and then let's link that with the teaching of literature through those same periods, philosophy through those same periods, development of church through those same periods, and we can see how worldviews have developed, how our Christian worldviews have developed within the context of culture all through the years, and how it holds up over time. And so that's what we do, and we call it our worldview curriculum. It's our general core curriculum, very different from what every other school has, because then we require it of everybody because we value worldview. Third thing we require is chapel, and I lead it personally. I preach in about half the chapels. I'm doing a series this semester in 1 Corinthians 13, and, you know, I think it's critical for us to come together and worship. We come out of a lot of different denominational backgrounds. We're a Presbyterian school, but we got a ton of Baptists. We got Methodists. We've got Catholic students. We got all kinds of students. We got students who have no church background, and that's fine. I love that. Chapel is not a substitute for church, but chapel is a chance to experience worship together.
Did you say, did you say that's a daily chapel?
No, once a week.
Okay.
No, we'd wear ourselves out if we did it daily.
Preaching.
Those are the old days of higher ed. So
yeah.
Once a week, I think, is a good experience for students because I want them to enjoy worship, not see it as a burden.
Yeah.
And so it's been a great thing. So we require chapel. And the fourth thing we require is a capstone course called Kingdom Life and Work, which is designed to help students understand how to balance their calling and career with family. Because I don't care how happy and successful they are in their career, if they're not happy at home, they're not going to have a successful life. And so we teach this course of marriage and family to help them prepare for a biblical understanding of how to live in that kind of balance. So by what we require, you can tell what's important to us. We value gifts, we value worldview, we value worship, we value the family. And I always challenge students, take that same criteria to any other school, ask them what they require of everybody, and that'll tell you what they value. And if they don't require anything of everybody, that tells you they have no value base. And make the decision more on those lines than the pictures and the brochures.
Well, Dr. Perry, you've given us a compelling argument for having a Christian higher education. One of the things we've done in our past programs is try to help parents identify what kind of education is most appropriate for their child, whether it's a public school, whether it's a Christian school, whether it's homeschool. And I wondered if you could just comment, maybe for parents who have rising high school students ready for college, how do you help them make that decision between a Christian education, as you have at Belhaven, or a state school? And the reason I ask is that we discover, and you're aware of this, that many college students going to a non-Christian education are challenged in their faith and often come away without it.
Yeah, and that's a huge problem today, because the big schools, especially the schools that are well-known, they're all about size, sports, status, and sizzle.
Yes.
And that is what drives them.
Yes.
And so moms and dads see that same athletic team on TV, they see that same campus they went to, and they assume it's the same in the classroom, and it is not at all.
Right.
And here's the easiest way to decide. 52% of evangelical high school students, they've been raised in the church, 52% will lose their faith before they graduate their state school.
Yes.
So, you know, everybody says, well, my student's stronger, and I pray that they are. My student's going to get involved in, you know, the Baptist group, or the RUF group, or the whatever, and I pray that they do. They're going to be in a local church, and I pray that they do. But the tide of those schools is so enormous, and the tragedies are so overwhelming. And I have tons of students who come to us using their junior year. Usually parents will call and say they have messed up at such and such a university. Would you take them? They'll come, they'll spend the first year with us, and then I'll hear from the parents every time with the same thing. Why didn't we send them sooner? And it's a huge risk to put the thing you love the most into an environment where everything that you stand for, they're pulling against. And you won't see it. It's all underground. It's all in the undertow. But the pressures on those students are absolutely remarkable. I think, unfortunately, a lot of Christian families assume they can't afford Christian private higher education, and that is not true at all. You would be shocked at the way we are able to package financial aid, either through federal and state aid and through grants from the university that are based on ACT scores and family financial need to make this affordable. Yeah, if parents got to pay something, if you want to go absolutely for free, you can't do that. But I'm always surprised at how many parents do everything they can for 18 years to raise that child just perfectly. And then when it comes to that college decision, they want to save $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 and not send them to Christian school. And it's just such a huge risk. I hate for parents to do that. So we work very hard to keep Belhaven very affordable. We're named one of America's best college buys on purpose because we work hard to keep the price down so Christian families can come.
We're running out of time, Dr. Parrott, but I want to give you an opportunity to just say a bit more about your faculty. Where do you find them? How do you attract them? And how do you hold them accountable to uphold and to teach that biblical worldview in all their classes?
Well, the most important thing we do is hire good faculty. And if you hire great people who have a passion for the Lord and a passion for their discipline, then you just need to get out of the way and let them do it. And so we're incredibly selective on the front end, and we will go through tons and tons of applications. You know, nobody comes to us whose faith is, well, we say faith is not visible. You could be a strong Christian and be quiet about it, and that's fine, but that's not going to work on our campus where we need your faith to be active. One of the questions we ask in our interview process, if a student came to you and said, how do I find the Lord? How would you lead them to Christ? We want to make sure a faculty member is able to do that. But so that's a kind of a foundation for us. But we want experienced teachers with great credentials. About 90% of our faculty have terminal degrees. And so we're looking for doctorates. We're looking for experienced teachers. Unfortunately, most families don't realize they send their students to state university. And the first couple of years, what they're going to get are what's called teaching assistants. But that means my graduates from last year who went to that university to get a master's degree are going to be put in freshman and sophomore classes. Teach those. They don't have any teaching experience. They're good people, but they don't have teaching experience. We want people who fought, who have the degree, they're not rookies, and they know what they're doing. And so we work very hard to find those kind of folks. But I tell you, we've got some incredible faculty. But I was standing on the sidelines of a football game last week with two students who came from one of these state university kind of situations, but they'd been on the other side of it. And they just went on and on. They just said, your faculty care so much. They care so much. I've never seen faculty who actually care so much. And I think, you know, we really do. The single best question I've ever been asked by a student in a student forum, and I've held hundreds of them through the years, is, do you love us? And we love our students because we believe God handpicks every student to come to Belhaven. If God handpicked them to come to us, we better take awfully good care of them, and we better love them in His name.
Thank you so much, Dr. Parrott.
Dr. Parrott, thank you so much for giving us the time this morning. It's been an enlightening conversation. May God continue to bless you and prosper the mission and vision of Belhaven University. Until next week, this is John Sloop and Dean Welty encouraging you, as always, to be salt and light, and to make a difference for Jesus at the crossroads where faith and culture meet.
This is the day that the Lord